Yes,
Silas.
Hi, Silas. Nice to meet you.
This is the Subcommittee on Human Services, Ways and Means. I'm Senator Bates. I'm chairing this morning. We're taking public testimony on the Medical Assistance Program, Benefit Board, Oregon Educators Benefit Board, and Public Health. And if there's anything else anybody wants to talk about, you're going to be limited to 3 minutes in your testimony because that's my attention span. Okay, so, and that way we'll get through it and everybody have a chance to speak. And Linda, do you have anything to say to help us out here? Okay. I'll be calling up in groups of threes, and I'll try to remember to tell you who's on deck so they can get ready to come up next. And you may find yourself sitting next to somebody you don't know, but that's the way we normally do it. It's just a way of getting through and giving everyone a chance to speak. So I'm going to start off with, and I also will start by telling you that I'm not very good at names sometimes, and if I really make a mess of your name, please forgive me and just correct me when you get up here. So we'll start with Silas Halloran Steiner, Tom Kuhn, and Diana Hoover.
Good morning, Chair Bates.
Good morning. Just go ahead and give us your name and where you're from, not your exact address, just where you're from, and we'll look forward to your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Silas Halloran Steiner. I'm the Health and Human Services Director in Yamhill County and also Chair of the Legislative Committee for the Coalition of Local Health Officials. I want to cover 3 points today. First, some of the current challenges we're facing, public health funding. Second, investments that are needed in local public health. And third, the value of coordinated care organization partnerships with local public health. The facts are clear that funding in Oregon for public health has not been a priority. We rank 46th in the nation for total public health investment. And from 2008 to 2013, the number of disease reports has increased over 30%, while funding to investigate and respond to those reports has decreased over 10%. The last investment communicable disease response for local health departments was during the 2007 session, which brings me to my second point. We need to continue to invest in local public health. The modernization of public health work is important. The system changes that we need to move to foundational capabilities need to be made, and during that process, we want to be careful to continue funding. Specifically, we are asking you to add back reductions to the governor's balanced budget. That's $2.8 million in contraceptive care and $4 million in tobacco prevention, and support the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement prevention package, and increase funding for communicable disease prevention, investigation, and control. Which brings me to my third point, which is across Oregon, CCOs and local public health are working together effectively. In Yamhill County, our CCO has identified maternal and child health improvement as a strategic goal. We're establishing maternal medical homes. Behaviorists are now placed in every prenatal care center across the community. And we have alternative payment models under development to pay for healthy babies and better preventative care. Healthy births, resilient families is part of a core mission in our early learning hub and the CCO. At our board, medical providers who are typically focused on health care are thinking differently about social determinants of health. We know that 10% of health is determined by medical care, while 60% is lifestyle, behavioral, social, and environmental factors. So conversations are changing around prevention and wellness. Local public health is part of that. Systems are being built from the bottom up. For example, our health officer, who's also a local pediatrician, organized an event last fall to target drug overdoses and chronic pain that's plaguing our communities. That community-wide event had over 100 prescribing providers, from dentists to family physicians to pediatricians and psychiatrists. They were all there, and the goal was to look at establishing community-wide opioid prescribing practices as well as develop a model for alternative treatment for chronic pain that's opening this month.
That's cool.
Yamhill County is not the exception. CCOs and local public health are working together to improve developmental screenings in Eastern Oregon, opiate prevention in the metro area, and tobacco prevention in Lane and Benton counties. And in closing, Public Health Modernization and Funding Investments for Local Public Health, and Senate Bill 5526 move us towards the promise of a healthier Oregon. Thank you for your time. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you for your comments. We know that Yamhill is doing some unusual things between the hubs, CCOs, and public health, and we're looking at that more later. So thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
Good morning. I am Tom Kuhn. I'm the Community Health Manager for Deschutes County Health Services in Central Oregon. I'm here today supporting investments in public health to ensure our local health departments have the capacity to address the rising number of reportable diseases and that we continue to prevent the leading causes of death and disease in Oregon. Communicable disease investigation and response is a foundational public health capability that serves to protect the safety and health of our communities. Not only do these programs protect Oregonians from foodborne illness outbreaks, sexually transmitted infections, and vaccine-preventable diseases, they are also trained and prepared to respond to animal bites, drug-resistant tuberculosis, and the most unique health topics you can possibly imagine. Recent examples of communicable disease work conducted in Deschutes include, in 2014, we responded to over 1,000 reportable diseases using a staff of under 2 full-time equivalents. And an example of this work, in 2014, we responded to 60 cases of pertussis while having only responded to 26 over the previous 8 years. Huge increase there. Recent Ebola response efforts include having staff available 24 hours to monitor persons returned from Ebola-affected countries in Africa and working with our hospital and clinical partners to create an Ebola response plan. I'd like to underscore the magnitude of cost associated with investigating reportable diseases, particularly the cost, often hundreds of thousands of dollars, of a single outbreak of a reemerging disease like measles. While we rely on state support for public health funding to perform communicable disease work, we are fortunate that we do receive county general fund support as well. Without it, we'd be unable to perform at our current level. In addition, Deschutes is one of the fastest growing counties in the state and nationally, and with growing populations comes growth in communicable diseases. Additional support will allow more time to focus on prevention efforts and more thoroughly investigate and limit the spread of sexually transmitted infections such as chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis, which now are on the rise. The benefits of communicable disease work are often not readily apparent or visible, yet they are vital to the health of our communities. In addition to these programs and numerous prevention-based programs, Deschutes County Health Services also works in our community to reduce the burden of chronic disease. Obesity and type 2 diabetes are growing at an alarming rate. The percentage of Oregon adults diagnosed with diabetes has doubled in the last 20 years. Prevalence of diabetes is higher among racial and ethnic minorities and low-income populations. Funding supported by the Oregon Public Health Division Healthy Communities Program supports our Living Well with Chronic Conditions program, which includes the diabetes-specific component. Research has demonstrated that people who complete the workshop have improved health outcomes and reduced utilization of health systems, ultimately saving taxpayers money. I'd like to thank you for allowing me to share this important public health work we do in Deschutes County, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I got two questions for you.
Sure.
Is there snow in the pass?
Yes, there is.
Thank you. Thank you. And secondly, could you give us something in writing later about what you're doing to increase immunization rates? We are extremely concerned. Senator Steiner Haywood has been leading the charge in this, trying to get those immunization rates up. When you hear an outbreak of pertussis like you've had, which is a life-threatening disease, it's not just whooping cough, it's a life-threatening disease which can also leave children with brain deficits, hearing loss. It's very important that we start doing a better job in this, and I'd like to hear what public health would like to do as far as leading the charge on that. Yeah. You don't have to answer right now.
Thank you.
I'm guessing you're Diane.
I am, sir.
Is it Diane?
Diane.
No, I got one right. Okay.
Good morning. My name's Diane Hoover. I'm the public health director in Josephine County. I'm here today in support for maintaining current public health funding and to advocate for additional investments in public health to ensure that local health departments are able to protect the safety of our communities and prevent leading causes of death and disease for Oregonians. As you may know, Josephine County faces significant economic challenges. We have worked to identify efficiencies and fostered new partnerships to ensure the success of our public health department. Part of our success has been due, in no small measure, to the successful public-private partnerships that have been forged with local coordinated care organizations. For example, in the 2012-2013 fiscal year, I was facing serious staffing cuts due to declining general fund support. The All-Care CCO, in recognition of the value of public health, provided a one-year grant of $171,000 to keep community services at status quo levels. Since then, AllCare and the Public Health Department have continued to partner to improve healthcare access and outcomes for vulnerable populations in our rural county. These successes notwithstanding, there are some public health services that are inherently governmental and should be provided by government public health. Communicable disease investigation and surveillance is one of these services. Due to fiscal constraints, small departments like ours are staffed at levels where we are at risk for single point critical mission failure for appropriate communicable disease investigation. Currently, if just one nurse calls in sick, it means that we have to make the decision to either provide immunizations that day and family planning services or do communicable disease investigations. The staff is pencil thin and our organization is flat. Due to lack of funding, we have been unable to obtain the talent needed to fulfill all the positions needed and have been unable to provide adequate follow-up for many public health problems. Our communities deserve more than the bare minimum coverage for these services, and that makes a significant difference in their health. My written testimony provides specific budget details for the Josephine County Public Health Department. We currently rely on the state support for public health funding to fund staff who conduct communicable disease investigations, administer Title X family planning services, and provide immunizations to prevent disease. Additional funding would allow our health department to provide all these services required in our contract with the state each and every day that we're open to the public. It would allow us to engage with local providers to increase immunization rates and increase access to family planning. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to leave you with two important points. First, the funding that legislature allocates to state support for public health provides critical funding so that we at a county level can provide communicable disease nurses in our community. Secondly, increasing this funding would allow us to better protect and serve a community where 31% of children under the age of 18 are being raised in poverty. 62% of all pregnant women in my county are served by WIC food vouchers. Josephine County ranked 33rd of 34 ranked counties for social and economic factors that can potentially adversely affect health in the 2015 county health rankings. In a community like ours, state support for public health isn't just important, it's priceless. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Diane.
Mr. Chair, really quick. Okay, so you three are a great opportunity for me to ask this question. 2 years ago, this legislative body passed House Bill 3194 that dealt with helping the local communities, specifically community-based correction side of it, helping people to reenter back into the communities from prisons. You've got to have some connection there, I would think, from where all three of you stand. Has there been any discussion at all within your counties, especially with the local public safety coordinating councils, the potential of getting some of those dollars to help you? I'm just curious.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, at least in Yamhill County, I wear a couple of different hats also as a community mental health program director. And I think what typically happens across the state, certainly this has been the case in our community, is when local public safety thinks about making those reinvestments to keep offender populations from recidivating, they look at behavioral health disorders first and public health interventions and other health care secondly. So there have been conversations and opportunities to think about how do we keep people from going back to prison, and some of them have special needs or addictions or mental health services needs, and then that tends to be the first place that our community makes those investments. We have not had any conversations about how do we involve a local public health infrastructure or system support, like communicable disease need or an outbreak or something like that. They really are not thinking along those parallel paths, although I really appreciate the thought. But times are tight, and those dollars get spread thin quickly.
Diane, I got a quick question for you.
Yes,
you have
sir.
Three CCOs in Josephine County, which is a little unusual, but you do have three there.
We have two. We have primary health, and we have all care.
Okay, the other one must have left the Gnomes group. Did the other CCO offer to step up and help out?
They have not traditionally. They are now coming to the table when it comes to targeted case management and some of the clinical activities that are part of the global budget.
Okay. Well, all I'm going to say is that with the changes that are occurring with the ACA, the changes that are occurring in public health, getting back to what I think is your primary missions, the relationships between CCOs and public health are going to be really, really important. And there's funding there available, I believe, that will actually help you out a great deal. And I think people are just starting to realize that. And I'm disappointed to hear that one CCO stepped up, which I applaud All Care for doing that. It's the old Maripa group. And that the other one didn't is concerning. And so I would look forward to more discussions with the relationship between CCOs and public health.
Co-chairs, member of the committee, if I might comment, I agree 100% that those partnerships are critical. And in my written testimony, I did highlight that we still have Medicaid coverage for 25% of the state, while public health serves 100% of the population. And we need to think seriously about the other populations that CCOs will not see as their members as we develop a system that can respond to the challenges we're facing.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, really quick. This is a general comment. You all came quite a distance to come talk to us. Yamhill, maybe not quite so far, but certainly Deschutes and Josephine. And you brought your kids, which is awesome. I think it's really wonderful that they're here. I know it's tough for people who come a long way away to come and testify for 3 minutes. It means something to us. It really does. And you are making the effort to come and tell your stories and point out how this is an issue that affects every single county in our state. Helps us really understand the importance of what we're doing. So please believe that the effort you put into coming here today was totally worth it. And I know it's tough to come and just testify for 3 minutes, but it makes a world of difference. And thank you for making that effort, and thank you for what you do on your home front. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for your time, and I hope you have a good day.
Oops.
Thank you, Chair Bates. I actually just wanted to encourage you, Senator Bates, that your memory is not failing you on OLMS. OLMS is primary health, so you're still as sharp as a tack.
Yeah, right. Okay. Thanks for trying to bail me out. Thank you all for your testimony, and I can only echo what Senator Starnhammer said. Thanks for coming so long a distance, and I'm glad you're snowing the pass.
Thank you.
Pat Crozier, Lauren Nichols, and Commissioner Carlson, to be followed by a panel of four, Troy Rayburn, Margaret Riggs-Klein, Jan, I think it's Frankie, and Eric Jones, I believe. So those four will be ready to come up next. We're missing somebody. Here we go. Commissioner, you want to lead us off?
Oh, thank you, Senator Bates and members of the committee. I am Janet Carlson, Commissioner for Marion County. I did provide prepared testimony. I'm hoping that you have that in front of you. I brought extra copies if you do not. And in the prepared testimony, I do talk about the wonderful things that Marion County's public health services do, the staff that are provided through the state funding, and also the fact that we were the first public health department in Oregon to be accredited, which we worked very hard at and are very proud about. I want to give you 3 points to take away today. Number one is that public health is woefully underfunded. When I was a state representative here in 2001 and 2002, we were having the same conversation. And with the Future of Public Health Task Force, one of the revealing statistics that came out of that group is that we're 46th in the nation in terms of funding public health. And that is a difficult statistic to swallow. There was a slight bump up in 2007. I think that's the last time there was actually an increase. And so recognizing that funding is tight everywhere, but this is a really critical area. Number two is that counties put significant dollars into public health. And I provided a pie chart for you that our public health department put together. Marion County in 2013-14 put $2.26 million into public health. That's 25% of the budget. The state was $1.25 million. That's 14% of the budget. And then also want to acknowledge that fees cover quite a bit of the cost of public health. Overall, about 24%. And restaurant inspections, swimming pool inspections, those fees were about $1 million from businesses in the community. It's very difficult for timber-dependent counties to do the same kind of contribution that Marion County is doing, and so we're making up the difference for that underfunding that we have through the state. And my last point is that coordinated care organizations, and I serve on the board of directors of Willamette Valley Community Health, and I know the difficult work we're doing to try to integrate mental health and clinical services and dental care, but public health plays a very important role in that, in the prevention, in the vision of the triple aim. Our public health director yesterday, when I talked to her, said that really public health fits where people live, work, and play, so things can happen in a doctor's office, as you know, but things also have to happen in the community to prevent obesity, to deal with tobacco prevention, those community-based strategies. Senator Winters isn't here, but I was going to point out the I Love Me and 5210. Those are community-based kinds of strategies that are very important that public health departments help get the word out and help get the community involved. So those are my three main points, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Bates and Chair Nathanson and members of the House Healthcare Committee. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today on public health funding as a part of the Oregon Health Authority budget. And I'm particularly thankful to be a part of, you know, in front of this committee because so many of you have shown leadership and commitment to public health initiatives over the years. My name is Lorreen Nichols. I'm the Director of Community Health Services for Multnomah County Public Health. I'm also a member of Oregon Health Authority's Public Health Advisory Board. Public health is really the backbone of a healthy community. And the legislature's strong commitment to a healthy Oregon set forth the Task Force for the Future of Public Health Services. And among the agreed upon recommendations for that, out of that were a set of public health foundational capabilities and programs and a structure for prioritizing that and funding that and making sure that that's equitably distributed and available across our state. An example of one of those foundational programs and capabilities in action is Multnomah County's response to Ebola this last fall, where on Halloween we had our first suspected case of Ebola in this state. And our staff were able to respond quickly, successfully, with national partners, with state partners, and a lot of the work that we had in place had been done months earlier, working with community partners and really addressing health equity in our community. Our successful response, that was not, you know, a matter of luck. That was advanced preparation and that was teamwork. And it was coordinated by a very stretched and thin public health system, but it's still very functional. As you've heard, you know, there's examples of this going on across the state, and yet we remain 46th in the level of per capita state investment. Some of the federal grants boost some investment in public health, but it comes in very categorically, and it's based on agendas in D.C. and Atlanta, and not really on the priorities of Oregonians. And the additional funding comes from, you know, local communities, and the burden really falls on local jurisdictions. And without that sufficient state investment, local health departments really cannot address the health challenges in our population and in our communities. And these issues like Ebola and pertussis and tobacco use prevention that we really need to be engaged in, this doesn't stop on county lines. We have to ensure that communities across our state have equitable access to these types of foundational programs. And this investment in public health is really synergistic with health reform. Keeping our children healthy, our families healthy, our communities healthy, allows our kids to learn, reduces the health care costs, and really helps our communities thrive. And the work that's done in health transformation and early learning, that's visionary work. And I thank you all for that. And years of public health experience, the decades that we've honed in public health practice, can really add to that effort. Because at present, we are really unequal partners. And we invest so much in healthcare dollars. But health is much more than that. And we need much more for a healthy community. Oregon's always been a leader in investing in the future, and I thank all of you for that and encourage you to continue your full investment in public health. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I went red.
It is. Yeah. But the commissioner gave you an extra 30 seconds.
So okay. Thank you. Okay.
And you owe her now.
I do.
Good morning, Co-Chair Senator Bates and Representative Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Pat Crozier, and I am the Linn County Public Health Program Manager. And I'm here today to seek support for additional investments in public health to really ensure that our local health departments have the capacity to address rising numbers of reportable diseases. I'd kind of like to talk to you a little bit about the work we do in Linn County. Excuse me. We have a reproductive health program that provides free or low-cost reproductive health services and birth control to men, women, and teens who need it. And our goal really is to prevent unintended pregnancies. Last year, we saw approximately 1,800 individual clients. And of those, there were 823 that didn't have any form of insurance. We saw 877 new clients, so that really speaks to the need in our community for the service. Of the C-Care money we receive, which is contraceptive care, that provided for about 500 of those clients' visits. And that equates to about $4,614,000 if you base it on the average cost of an OHP delivery in first year of infant care. Our communicable disease program is a foundational and essential public health service. Last year, we had about 889 reportable diseases that came in, and each one of those involves investigative work, putting data entry, and working with providers. We also saw a large increase, as others have said, in our sexually transmitted disease infections. Our gonorrhea is up 100%. Our syphilis is up 25%, chlamydia is up 14%. We had 12 outbreaks that we have to investigate. In each one of those, they could include E. coli, norovirus, pertussis. Each one of those requires hours of investigation and interviews with the infected people and then working with facilities to stop the spread of that disease. We did have a person with Ebola that we were monitoring a person in our community, and along with that, we worked with our local hospitals and EMS system to come up with plans and prepare our community for an outbreak. Linn County receives about $33,000 we put into our communicable disease program, and our county puts in $297,000. And even with that, we are rapidly falling behind in our capacity to protect our citizens. Maintaining current public health funding and investing in communicable disease and reproductive health services ensure that the local public health programs are able to protect all Oregonians, and it really is a matter of public safety. So I'd like to thank you for allowing me to share the work that we're doing in Linn County and to ask your support for funding these important public health work.
Thank you all for your testimony. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Commissioner, it's good to see you again. I noticed that as I sat here that you and I came into this building as freshmen. I had a four-year commitment. You were always smarter than I was. And you got out, and I'm still here. So we need to figure this thing out. Troy Rayburn, Margaret Riggs Klein, Jan Frankie, and Eric Jones. And while they're coming up, Mr. Halloran Steiner. If you're leaving, that's great, but I was going to invite your children up to the podium if they want to sit here for a while and watch the proceedings from this side.
If they're not,
I don't want to scare them.
Family motto, never let school get in the way of your education. That's where they're headed, is school.
Come sit up here. I've even got the same last name, sort of, as you guys. But I don't think we're related, unfortunately. So go have a seat.
Did you see her last name?
It's the same as yours. You guys are HS and I'm SH, so yeah. It's the same concept.
You can leave anytime you want to. You get bored, just go ahead and leave.
Come on up here. It's great to have you here.
We expect you to ask some tough questions.
We're delighted to have you here with us.
Please introduce yourself. Please introduce yourself to the committee and give us your testimony, please.
Thank you, Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Troy Rayburn. I'm the State Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society, which is the advocacy arm of the American Cancer Society and, excuse me, American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. Today I'm here with my colleagues from the Susan G. Komen Foundation to speak to House Senate Bill 5526, More specifically, ACS CAN supports the $970,000 in the recommended budget for the Oregon Health Authority's breast and cervical cancer program, and a modest increase of 5%, which totals $48,500, due to both the cost of inflation and the need for broader program support for increased outreach services to low-income, uninsured, and underinsured women, especially women of underserved populations. OHA's breast and cervical cancer program provides breast and cervical cancer screening services, including free pap tests and mammograms to women ages 40 to 64 who are uninsured or underinsured and have income below 250% of the federal poverty line. From 2008 through 2013, over 25,000 Oregon women were served by the program, and the program detected 292 breast cancers and 222 cervical cancers. As you can see, the program works. While the Affordable Care Act has provided thousands of low-income women greater access to preventative cancer screenings and treatment, gaps still remain for women who remain uninsured or underinsured. It is estimated that over 63,909 Oregon women will continue to lack access to cervical cancer screenings, and 25,529 women will lack access to breast cancer screenings in 2015 and beyond. In closing, maintaining existing funding and providing that modest increase for greater outreach and education services will preserve a critical safety net for thousands of Oregon women who continue to lack essential access to screening services. Please support the existing level of and a modest increase to OHA's breast and cervical cancer program for early detection services for low-income and other medically underserved women. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Troy. Good morning, Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 5526 and inviting testimony from Susan G. Komen, Oregon and Southwest Washington. For the record, my name is Margaret Riggs Klein. I'm the Director of Programs and Operations for Susan G. Komen of Oregon and Southwest Washington. Susan G. Komen is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization and the largest private funder of breast cancer research and support in the United States. The mission of Susan G. Komen is to save lives and end breast cancer forever through empowering individuals, ensuring quality of care, and energizing science to find cures. Susan G. Komen, Oregon and Southwest Washington, supports the $970,000 in the governor's recommended budget for the Oregon Health Authority's breast and cervical cancer program in a modest increase of 5%, as noted, $48,500, due to both the cost of inflation and to provide broader program support for increased outreach services for women of color, low-income, uninsured, underinsured, and medically underserved women in Oregon to gain access to life-saving screening for early detection of breast and cervical cancers. Breast cancer is the most common cancer among women, accounting for nearly one of every four cancers diagnosed in the United States. Oregon and Washington have some of the highest breast cancer rates in the country. This week in our state, 70 women will hear the words, "You have breast cancer," and another 10 women will die. When you multiply this by 52 weeks in any given year, for me this raises the question, isn't it time that we end breast cancer? Oregon Health Authority's breast and cervical cancer program provides needed screening through free pap tests and mammography for women ages 40 to 64 who are uninsured and underinsured and have income levels below 250% of the federal poverty line. As noted, from 2008 to 2013, over 25,000 Oregon women were served by the program, with 292 breast cancers and 228 cervical cancers being detected. While the program works, there are still women who need to be served. While the Affordable Care Act provides women greater access to preventative cancer screening, gaps still remain for women of color, uninsured, and underinsured. It is estimated that 25,529 women lack access to breast cancer screening. In Oregon, only 74% of women are being screened for breast cancer, with the rates of women of color, specifically the rates for African American women, being the most concerning at 57%, leaving 43% uninsured. For those screened for breast cancer and with cancer detected early, the five-year survival rate is 99%. However, when screening is delayed, this drops to the low 70s. Maintaining the existing funding and providing for a modest increase will allow for greater and more focused outreach to target communities and communities with greatest need. particularly women of color, while preserving a critical safety net essential screening services. I would ask you to please support the existing funding of the Breast and Cervical Cancer Program for early detection of services. I have included in the exhibit the slides of the breast cancer statistics for regionally specific information. Thank you for the opportunity to present today, and I open to any questions you might have.
Thank you for your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Bates, Chair Nathanson, and members of the committee. My life changed radically in May of 2001. After being diagnosed with breast cancer, I spent about 6 months undergoing radiation and working to get my strength back. As a high school teacher, I had a busy work life. I had two teenage, college-age daughters, and I also helped on our Christmas tree farm. When you get a diagnosis of a serious injury or illness, pardon me, many will tell you they immediately start thinking about their lives and the values by which they live. While it was a journey I would not choose, I now value what I learned about myself and my family. Within a year of my diagnosis, I joined the Komen Oregon Southwest Washington affiliate as a volunteer advocate. My background as a social studies teacher was a natural fit for speaking on behalf of the organization, and my experience as a survivor, I believe, lent credibility to my words. As a teacher, I had great insurance. As a wife, mother, sister, and daughter, I had exceptional support from my family. Early detection through a routine checkup meant that I was diagnosed with, at that time, a 95% survival rate. Many in our community are not so blessed. Some have inadequate insurance, some none. They still have the roles to play of wife, mother, sister, daughter. Life doesn't stop when you get a cancer diagnosis, and one does not want it to stop. In the intervening years, we have had great success in funding the strategies for treatment which have been developed, all of which have resulted in a 99% survival rate with early detection and treatment. Further, in May of last year, I joined a research study at OHSU concerning the issue of falling for post-chemo patients. As I'm sure you're aware, the risk of falling among these survivors rises significantly. And in fact, I had fallen and broken my orbital bone, so I messed up my face pretty good. The first night of this class, not one but two participants mentioned immediately, "Oh, if it hadn't been for the breast and cervical cancer program, I wouldn't have been diagnosed and treated." So I have two new friends who are the direct result of the good that can come out of this program. And therein lies the issue about which we speak today. Early detection saves lives and is less costly than late-stage treatment. This funding for the BCCP in Senate Bill 5526 means more Oregonians develop an awareness and have access to screening in order to save a wife, a mother, a sister, a daughter, a husband, or a father. Thank you.
Jan, for the record, could you identify yourself real quickly?
I can. I am Jan Franke.
Thank you for your testimony.
And, you're welcome.
Congratulations on your recovery.
Thank you. It's been a long time now, but we're still working.
Good morning, Senator Bates, Representative Nathanson, members of the committee, and also attendees here. I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm Eric Jones from Gresham, a 14-year volunteer with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, and also an ambassador for that organization. I want to speak today on the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement funding of the TPEP program, the Tobacco Prevention and Education Program. It's an experience a program that I have experience with, and so I'd like to share that with you. I wanted to let you know that I lost my first wife 12 years ago, Patty, to lung and liver cancer, and it came directly from her smoking of 34 years. So this is a very passionate issue for me, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. Patty became a laryngectomy in 1998, and if you know what that is, she had a hole in her throat, she no longer had vocal cords, she breathed through the neck. She went on to learn esophageal speech, which is also called burp talking. And as a laryngectomy, this woman went on to speak to over 4,000 Oregon school children about the problems of using tobacco. And she made a difference. Kids would literally throw away packs of cigarettes when they left her speaking sessions. I'm really proud of her, the difference making that she made in her life. Unfortunately, in 2002, the cancer came back as lung and liver cancer, and I ultimately lost her to that. Patty worked as part of the TPEP program in affiliation with the American Cancer Society and the Cancer Action Network. So, and I, we actually worked together as part of that program in the Clackamas County program. So what we would do is go to fairs, festivals, and other community events, and we would speak to people that were there, kids and also adults, and it was amazing to see the impact that that outreach had on the attendees of those events. For example, we had a tar jar, which is actually, you can see in this picture, which basically showed the substance that builds up in people's lungs when they smoke. We also had something called a death penny jar, which represented the number of individuals lost in Oregon every day to tobacco use, which was very effective. We had, of course, posters and outreach materials, and we also had a Wheel of Fortune wheel, which kids could spin, and then we would ask them a question or a couple questions, and they could win a prize. It really got the kids' attention and got them engaged, and at the same time, it got the adults interested in paying attention as well. In 2001, 2002, which is when we did most of our outreach, the program TPEP was much better funded than it is today, in today's dollars. We saw how smoking started going down during the time that the program was more fully funded, and when it's been cut, smoking has started going up again. Patty had an unquenchable thirst for making a difference in this issue. My second wife is here with me today. We have that same passion. We want to make a difference. We want to save Oregonians' lives, kids and adults. So I'm asking you to please fund the TPEP program at $5 million for the next biennium with TMSA dollars. And I thank you very much for your time and attention today and be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for your testimony. I'll speak to the entire committee. I'm sorry about the loss of your first wife.
It's
a very poignant story. Thank you. Question?
I have a question. Thank you. So as you know, the proposal is to put that money as part of the match since we could draw down federal funds, and the hope is that CCOs with the incentives of reducing smoking are going to carry on that kind of program. Can you tell me what kind of conversations you've had to ensure that the same kind of activities are able to carry on in the future?
Representative, as a volunteer, I'm not fully able to speak to that, but Troy with the Cancer Action Network may be able to.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. There have been a number of conversations with a broad coalition of members, ranging from the Heart Association, the Lung Association, the Oregon Nursing Association. The list goes on with regards to making sure that the funds are delivered and used effectively.
Follow up?
Well, follow up. I'm just concerned about how this will happen. We're kind of in a transition period, and if the funds are removed from that direct program, I think it's incredibly important that we pay on the front end and not on the back end. And I just really want to know about the conversations that are happening to ensure. And I know the challenge is CCOs cover 25% of the population. You have been able to cover 100%. So I'm just concerned about this going forward. I know it's we all care about it on this committee, and I would love to hear more about the conversations that are happening. I don't want to see it fall through the cracks.
Great. Will do. What I'll do is I'll let my colleagues behind me speak to that a little bit later, and I'll track down the answer for you and follow up.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Just to follow up on that, this is a combination of public health, CCOs, and the ability to leverage those to a higher number with the funds we have available, as long as the CCOs step up and support the programs we work in, and I particularly like yours. That really is, makes an impact on young kids where we are seeing an increase in smoking. Adults, it's decreasing, but with kids, it's going up, and that's really, it's really concerning. Thank you very much. Thank you all for your testimony.
Thank you, everyone.
Next up is John Mullen, Sarah Hartstein, and Sarah Higginbotham.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Hope you have a good trip back.
Thank you so much.
Okay. John Mullen is testifying in the committee right now, so I'm going to bring up Mel Rader. And how about you leading us off?
Oh, okay. Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, and members of the committee, my name is Sarah Higginbotham, and I'm here on behalf of the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association. Thank you for the opportunity to support investment in Oregon's public health. The two leading causes of preventable death in Oregon are tobacco use and obesity, and I'd like to highlight two important programs that the Public Health Division is using to address these and highlight one critically important funding stream for both. To start with the Tobacco Prevention and Education Program, TPEP. Despite declines in tobacco use, it remains Oregon's leading cause of preventable death, killing 7,000 Oregonians each year while draining our pocketbooks and state budget. Tobacco is a major risk factor for a long list of diseases, including cardiovascular disease and stroke, which combine to be Oregon's biggest killers. Whether or not we use tobacco, we all pay the price. Medical expenses and lost wages from tobacco-related disease and premature death cost Oregon $2.5 billion each year. And additionally, glaring health disparities persist. Lower-income Oregonians in certain racial and ethnic communities use tobacco at higher rates, and they suffer the harshest consequences. It has been 50 years since the Surgeon General's first warning about the harms of tobacco. Today, we know what policies work to save lives. We know that a cornerstone of a strong tobacco control program is a strongly supported evidence-based prevention program. Oregon's TPEP program since launching in 1997. Its locally driven efforts have helped reduce tobacco consumption, reduce tobacco consumption by more than 50%. And we know that for every $1 invested in TPEP, $5 is saved down the line. Currently, Oregon only funds its TPEP program at 28% of the recommended CDC level. The American Lung Association gave Oregon an F in its State of Tobacco Control 2015 report when it came to prevention. With TPEP's success at reducing tobacco use, the American Heart Association, along with other organizations, support maintaining the investment of $4 million in tobacco master settlement agreement dollars made in the last biennium, increasing that by $1 million in additional funding to continue making progress. Number two, on obesity prevention and the healthy communities programs. Today, about 60% of Oregon adults are overweight or obese, as well as one in four Oregon kids. Our social and physical environments are powerful influencers, as you all have been discussing, affecting what we eat, how we live, and how healthy we are. The Healthy Communities Program at the Oregon Health Authority should play a critical role in the effort of reshaping where we live, learn, work, and play to make sure everyone has access to healthy food and active environments. With Healthy Communities' emphasis on reducing the obesity epidemic at the local level, we support a new investment of $3 million in tobacco master settlement agreement dollars this biennium. A note on the tobacco master settlement agreement. When states signed the TMSA with the big four tobacco companies in 1998, tobacco companies agreed to pay states yearly installments as compensation for costs associated with tobacco-related disease. Oregon promised to use its settlement dollars to improve public health and protect Oregonians from the dangers of smoking. And in 2013, the legislature honored that promise for the first time by investing a small amount and dedicating that amount to tobacco prevention. The legislature has the opportunity to maintain this promise, and we support $5 million going towards the Tobacco Prevention Education Program, as well as a new investment of $3 million into healthy communities. We know, and I'll wrap up right now, that investing in these proposed prevention initiatives will honor the intent of that agreement and result in significant health benefits to Oregonians and long-term state savings. Thank you.
I'm going to get a little strict on time because we're going to run out of time here for everyone. Everyone has a right to speak, so I'm going to ask you to really hold it to 3 minutes, okay?
Good morning, Co-Chair Senator Bates and Representative Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Hartstein, and I'm the Health Policy Specialist at Benton County Health Department. I'm here on behalf of our Health Administrator, Charlie Fountain, supporting additional investments in public health. Today, I would like to primarily tell you about the work we are doing in Benton County and throughout our region to reduce tobacco use with tobacco master settlement agreement dollars. Our local health department, along with our colleagues at Linn and Lincoln County health departments, have developed outstanding regional partnerships with our coordinated care organization, Intercommunity Health Network, IHN, IHNCCO, I will refer to it as that as we move through. Two of our partners, Lincoln County Health Department and Dr. Kevin Iwanchina, Chief Medical Officer for IHNCCO, have also submitted written testimony for your review. Tobacco use is a major insurance cost driver, and IHNCCO membership has the second highest tobacco use rate of any CCO in Oregon. IHNCCO is an active partner in our regional tobacco prevention project funded by TMSA funds that were allocated specifically for tobacco prevention in the current state budget. While IHNCCO can and does provide tobacco cessation benefits for members, they are also aware that the vast sums spent on tobacco marketing means that cessation is an endless and expensive treadmill, and that community-level tobacco prevention is necessary to reduce the number of smokers and thereby lower Medicaid costs. Our regional project combines the expertise of the CCO in clinical interventions with the training and expertise of local health departments in community interventions. Without the TMSA funding, we would not have been able to offer support to over 100 social service agencies in Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln region to implement tobacco-free property policies and help client quit. We would also not have been able to work with municipalities to adopt strong local tobacco and e-cigarette ordinances that build on, supplement, and enhance the state statute. We would also not have been able to convene a clinical team of public health, CCO, and Samaritan Health Services staff to conduct a comprehensive assessment of tobacco cessation efforts within the health system and partner with our CCO to ensure that all pregnant mothers are screened for tobacco and get help to quit. If funding goes away, our capacity to continue this work will be severely limited. In addition to our tobacco work, Benton County has also worked with our community to improve access to healthy foods and opportunities for physical activity among low-income families and individuals. Continuing the funding of local prevention work with additional TMSA dollars is essential to furthering and strengthening the ability of our communities to address the leading causes of death and disease for all Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you. Spot on.
Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, my name is Mel Rader. I'm the Executive Director of Upstream Public Health, which is a nonprofit dedicated to improving the health of Oregonians. I believe strongly budgets are moral documents, and how we spend our money really affects the health and livelihood of real people across the state. And I also believe, the original intent of TMSA dollars, at least a portion of it, is to fund community health and prevent and reduce smoking use. And so I think it's very important that we expand funding for TPEP as well as the Healthy Communities Program. And it really makes economic sense to spend money on preventing disease. As was mentioned, the state tobacco prevention programs has been shown to save $5, at least $5 for every dollar spent. There's very few budget decisions where you can say that you spend this dollar and you save $5. And I think that's very powerful. Statewide tobacco use amounts to nearly $3 billion in healthcare costs each year in Oregon. Obesity-related costs were estimated at $1.6 billion per year in Oregon. The TPEP program, it doesn't dictate, okay, here's how we're going to address smoking. It gets those dollars into local communities to come up with community-driven solutions that might look different in different places, but have been shown to work over and over. And the Healthy Communities Program is taking a lot of what we've learned from TPEP and applying that to looking at healthy eating, physical activity, and diabetes management and other chronic diseases. I also mentioned, it's things like promoting healthier options in childcare centers and schools, promoting physical activity, activity. There's the health impact assessment program is one thing that has worked in terms of bringing health analysis into a wide range of decisions. Without that $3 million, the health impact assessment program would go away at the state, and that would be a big loss of expertise to look at a variety of health decisions. I ask you to invest more money in prevention, invest more money in the tobacco prevention program that has been shown to work in the Healthy Communities program that has great potential at saving money and promoting health at the same time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? You did a great job, no questions. Thank you. Cynthia Pappas, Stacy Cross, and Katrina Rothenberger.
Good morning, Chair Bates and Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. You'll have to pardon the frog in my throat this morning. Sorry. My name is Cynthia Pappas, and I serve as the President and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Southwestern Oregon. I'm testifying today to ask you to preserve and protect the critical funding for the Oregon Contraceptive Care Program, also known as C-Care. As you saw presented this week, the governor's recommended budget reduces the OHA budget for C-Care by $2.8 million. We respectfully request this committee restore the $2.8 million of general fund for this vital program. C-Care began in 1999 as a joint effort by the Department of Human Services, Office of Family Health, and the Office of Medical Assistance Programs to improve the well-being of Oregon women and families. Under C-Care, a waiver is used to expand Medicaid coverage for family planning services to individuals with incomes under 250% of the federal poverty level. The program must demonstrate budget neutrality annually, and having done so successfully, the Oregon program has been renewed 4 times since its inception. C-Care providers include county health departments around the state, university and college health centers, and community nonprofits such as Planned Parenthood. Family planning is a smart investment that saves Oregon taxpayers millions of dollars every year. In fact, C-Care is the most cost-effective state service Oregon provides, saving the state $11.7 million from the reduction in unintended births in 2012 alone. This program has a 9-to-1 federal match, which I'm sure you're all aware of. So for every dollar of state investment, we leverage $9 of federal matching funds. That's a pretty good deal. Cuts to C-Care risks balancing the state budget on the backs of vulnerable patients who need life-saving health care services. C-Care covers services such as breast and cervical cancer screenings, FDA-approved birth control, and vasectomies. In 1998, prior to C-Care, approximately 52,000 Oregonians sought services through the state family planning program at 97 participating clinics. In 2012, 186 family planning clinics in Oregon served over 65,000 clients funded by C-Care, 71% of whom were below the federal poverty level. C-Care is clearly achieving its goal of reducing unintended pregnancies in Oregon. A 2008 study cited Oregon's C-Care program as the most successful in the country. In fact, the Oregon program prevented more births than the national program from 2002 onward. The average national program is associated with a decline of 1.5 births per 1,000 women of childbearing age, whereas the effectiveness of the Oregon program increased over time to a decline of about 4 births per 1,000. So I'm just going to skip to the end. I think the benefits are clear. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Cynthia. I didn't want to cut you off because I know I'll pay a price later.
Yeah, you will. Yeah. No worries. Wow.
Good morning, Co-Chairs Bates and Co-Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Stacy Cross, and I am the President and CEO of Planned Parenthood Columbia Willamette. and thank you for being here this morning. I echo my colleague Cynthia Pappas' praise for C-Care and respectfully request the restoration of $2.8 million of general fund to meet the current patient need. Although Oregon has achieved great success in enrolling more than 113,000 patients on the exchange, C-Care still plays a critical role in ensuring that women have the health care they need when they need it. There is a presumption that healthcare transformation has mitigated the need for C-Care. It is true that there was a drop-off, but after the initial shift of the patients to the exchange plan, the number of patients enrolling in C-Care has plateaued. There are still women who do not have comprehensive healthcare plans and need the program for immediate coverage that serves as a bridge for full coverage. Planned Parenthood provides high-quality care for all patients. In fact, through our strong partnership with C-Care and CCOs, we are proud of the pivotal role we play in helping Oregon achieve the triple aim of lower costs, healthier people, and better outcomes. In three required healthcare metrics, effective use of contraception, adolescent well care visits, and timeliness of prenatal care, which Planned Parenthood Columbia Willamette is just getting ready to start. We're very excited about that. We do more than any other organization to prevent unintended pregnancies, which lower the number of OHP enrollees and keep the cost of high-risk labor and deliveries down. C-Care makes sense economically for the state and for Oregon women and families. Increased access to birth control is fundamental to improving women's health and the health of their families. The cost of birth control each year is equivalent to 5 weeks of groceries for a family of four, 9 tanks of gas in a minivan, or 1 semester of college textbooks. As healthcare transformation occurs, it continues to take shape, C-Care remains a vital program for those who can least afford the services they need to remain healthy and achieve the best outcomes. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Chair Bates, Chair Nathanson, and members of the committee, my name is Katrina Rothenberger, and I'm the Public Health Administrator for Polk County Public Health Department. I'm here today in support of additional investments in public health. I would like to primarily share with you the work we are doing in Polk County to address the need for comprehensive reproductive health care in a rural community. Polk County Public Health is an important access point for women seeking reproductive health services. The limited provider panel in my county exacerbates many existing barriers to health care, like transportation and access to affordable child care. Preliminary results from Polk County's partner survey found that 2 of the top 5 factors to most adversely affect our community include poverty and access to health care. Through our Title X and contraceptive care programs, we're able to provide pregnancy testing, pelvic exams, STD screening and treatment, counseling on nutrition, tobacco use, and relationship safety. Last year alone, Polk County Public Health averted 97 unintended pregnancies. Most of those pregnancies would become recipients under the Oregon Health Plan, as they occur most frequently among women in poverty between the ages of 18 and 24. In 2013, the average cost of an OHP delivery in the first year of infant health care was $17,028. Preventing unintended pregnancies in Polk County saved taxpayers over $800,000. The savings generated by local public health departments should, in part, be reinvested into local public health. My commissioners believe in the work of Polk County Family Planning and have dedicated over $50,000 in general fund to ensure the continuation of reproductive health services in our community. In addition to our local investment, continued state investment in the Oregon C-Care program will help ensure access to vital reproductive health services in Polk County. It will help us maintain our campaign for the Place for Teen Health. This is an educational and marketing campaign that aims to promote access to effective contraception use in teens and young adults. We also provide a 5-day-per-week walk-in family planning clinic for anyone to receive reproductive health services. Reinvesting the savings generated from local public health departments to maintain C-Care and access to reproductive health will positively contribute to the economic growth and sustainability of our community. I would like to thank the committee for your leadership in important public health initiatives. Urge you to continue this leadership and support the funding of this important public health work. Thank you.
Love your testimony. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. I mentioned in yesterday's hearing that I'd heard that the numbers had plateaued and that it was no longer dropping and there was still a big need for this program. What I heard today, which I didn't realize, is that the 9-to-1 federal match is continuing, which means they recognize there would probably be a gap, that it's great that ACA is there and has expanded and encouraged services, but there was recognition there's a gap, so I really appreciate that information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Katrina, could you either talk to me later or give me written information why your local CCO is not working more closely with you and why you have to maintain these services in your rural areas? We also noted earlier at another meeting that Polk County really has some significant issues in poverty, which was surprising to us. So I'd like to know a little bit more about that relationship or lack of relationship, and it's really one of our key questions before us for public health and CCOs and Planned Parenthood. We should be working together here, and I just don't see enough cooperation in some parts of the state, so I'd really like to see that if you have time.
Absolutely.
To do it. Thank you, Katrina. The next group up is... thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you.
John Mullen and Eva Ripito and Reagan Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
I'm going to be tight on the time. We got one more panel after you. We want to get everybody in.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. Sorry to be out of the room when I was called. John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. I was down in revenue testifying on a bill. That's one of my primary concerns, is the instructions that you have from the co-chairs to reduce these budgets by $140 million. You've heard compelling testimony already this morning. You'll hear more before the end of the hearing is over. A few things that I want to mention, and I'll be very quick about these, but there are a number of them. I thought the presentation by Lynn Saxton, the director of the Oregon Health Authority, gave us all a lot of confidence that she's up to speed and able to respond to the issues. But there are some things that are concerning that I want to just put on the record. One important thing is the bifurcation of the eligibility process between the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority. We have essentially a broken system as far as eligibility is concerned. It's a technology issue, but it's also an issue on the ground about how people get services. So I hope that's something that will be looked at further. The shared services between DHS and OHA, I testified in the DHS budget about the shared clients. I'm going to be meeting with Lynn and with Aaron Kelly Seal to talk about the next phase of a stakeholder discussion about looking not only at the shared services, but what happens on the ground and working with people where there are the two agencies involved. I want to mention a fraud investigation briefly, because there is a request for additional people in the budget. We, of course, find fraud unacceptable, but we also are concerned about people with language barriers, cultural barriers, disability issues, to make sure that we couple sensitivity with accountability. I also want to mention that about flexible services, where air conditioners have become a metaphor, but there are issues about who gets flexible services, who doesn't, and why, and how people find out about them, and how they're notified about decisions. And then I'll just end with one quick thing to say that Co-Chair Bates brought up an issue about the Medicaid cliff. We hope that House Bill 2934 that would bring a basic health plan to Oregon. It's a discussion phase. It's not asking for basic health to be implemented. We hope that that doesn't come to Ways and Means, because we hope it doesn't have a fiscal but continues the conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
Good morning, Co-Chair Bates and members of the committee. My name is Eva Ripito. I'm representing Oregon AFSCME Council 75. We represent local public health employees around the state. Many of the counties that you've heard from today, we have members there. So I'd just like to say yes to what they have said already, ditto. And then also let you know that last year I did serve on the Future of Public Health Task Force.
And in our discussions, we had we talked about budgets a lot and how, as you heard from the commissioner earlier, that we're ranked 46th in the nation for per capita spending on public health. So one of the recommendations in our report was that we have significant and sustained state funding for the governmental public health system be identified and allocated for proper operationalization of the foundational capabilities and programs. So as we move forward in our modernization, implementation of House Bill 3100, if it passes, we need to make sure that we make significant investments to support that work. Investments should include additional funds to address recent reductions in public health. These funds are needed to support communicable disease prevention, investigation, and control. The governor's budget invests $500,000 in the public health division to start planning work on implementing the new framework for public health. However, the public health system will need investments beyond that $500,000 to implement the new framework in future sessions. As we modernize our public health system, we are going to need to invest in local public health based on the needs and availability of services in communities. Oregon AFSCME asks that you make these much needed investments for public health. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Yeah.
Thank you. Co-Chair Bates, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Reagan Gray. I'm here representing the Oregon Health Equity Alliance, and we would like to express our support for funding the Race, Ethnicity, and Language Plus Disability Program, also known as REAL-D. OHE represents a collective effort of over 38 organizations who work together to make Oregon a more equitable place for all. Improved data collection and analysis is one of OHE's top priorities that they adopted in 2001. Our efforts, OHE's efforts, in large part led by APANO and the Center for Intercultural Organizing, resulted in the passage of House Bill 2134 in 2013. With strong bipartisan support. And we're here in strong support of the rules that were adopted by the state in 2014 to define and operationalize the standards for race, ethnicity, and language and disability status in the data collection in Oregon. These standards clarify definitions and data collection practices, addressing longstanding inconsistencies and gaps between in OHA and DHS. When we fully implement these standards, we will provide health and policymakers and program designers with more accurate data about community needs in order to improve service delivery, lower cost, and improve health outcomes. The current status quo is costly in our state and to our health and to our pocketbooks. The improvements funded by this proposal will provide more accurate data to state, tribal, and local governments, as well as CCOs and community-based organizations. And we urge your support for this funding. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for being on time.
Thank you. I just wanted to put it on the record, basically, that with our requests from the K-12 school communities to find additional funding, and added to that the shortfall of $140 million in this sector, are you guys and everybody in the room who's testified and maybe those who haven't, are you working together or are we going like this in that effort? Because we're being asked to dig out more money than the $140 million shortfall that we're having to fund more in K-12, and then we're going to see probably the higher ed coming in too, and not to mention the shortfalls in public safety. So I'm just wondering if all the players are at the same table and letting people eat each other know and people know this is our challenge. Because it's really difficult for us to, you know, it's difficult for me. My heart's here. My heart's with the schools. My heart's with public safety. But what I'd really hate to see is that we have to build another prison rather than funding up front your programs that keep people safe and out of that. I would love to close a prison. I would love to tell the people at DHS who do child abuse and child care workers, et cetera, that we really don't need you anymore because, you know, things are changing. And maybe this is all culminating because April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, but funding up front in those things would save a whole lot on the other end and allow us to then put more money into the schools, et cetera. So that's kind of my rant of the day. Thank you all.
Mr. Co-Chair, would you like a very brief response?
Very brief.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Boone, we worked together through the Human Services Coalition to present a united front. Hopefully you've all gotten the recommendations from the Human Services Coalition. HISCO also participates in the Revenue Coalition because we're not willing to just let the budget just be what the budget is with the available resources, and we're looking at revenue solutions as well.
Thank you.
May I add a comment as well, Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, and Representative Boone? There is a group of advocates that are addressing this issue and putting together a revenue proposal. It's going to be called Invest in Oregon, and it should be presented in next week, so you'll be seeing that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Last panel, and I've done fairly well in names today, but I think I'm going to lose it here. Marnie Cool, Sarah Basler, and Stacy Michelson. And I think the first name I probably just completely, how'd I do?
You did okay.
Are you Marnie?
I'm Marnie.
Oh, I got half the right.
Yeah, and it's Kyle.
Kyle,
it's
okay.
It's Dutch, so.
Thank
but,
you
know, I say I never mind being Marnie Cool, so. I'll take it.
So I'm not the first, okay.
No.
Marnie, you want to lead us off?
Sure. Senator Bates and Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, my name is Marnie Kyle. I'm the director of the Washington County Department of Health and Human Services. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on the important topic of public health funding. Our children and vulnerable members of our population are depending on you to make wise investments that protect and promote health for all. I'm going to try to get through this quick because I know we're running out of time. I want to request your support in two primary areas of the Oregon Health Authority Public Health Division budget. First, ensure sufficient and sustainable funds to implement foundational capabilities and programs. I urge you to maintain the current funding for 2013-15 and to reinvest the C-Care $2.8 million and the Tobacco Master Settlement funding for tobacco prevention. I can't remember who asked the question, but it was an extremely important question about will the funds go to the CCOs or into prevention. And I would urge you to consider that community-based upstream prevention is so much more effective, and public health at the local level, we're positioned to do that kind of work. Second, it's critical that we appropriately fund communicable disease prevention and control. Please invest $8 million in communicable disease prevention and response for local public health to backfill reductions in funding. This will help us to ensure that our staff and the communicable disease community are ready to respond and have the capacity to meet the rising tide of reportable diseases across Oregon. I'm going to skip to a couple things. I have provided written testimony, which provides some information about our communicable disease program and the work that we're doing around foundational capabilities and programs. We are deeply engaged with our community, and in partnership, we're implementing a community health improvement plan that improves access to care for all, we're working to reduce suicide and decrease communicable diseases and chronic disease. In 2014, Washington County had nearly 4,000 cases of reportable communicable disease, and 2,900 of those were sexually transmitted diseases. We have to be prepared to not only respond to these daily reportable diseases, but we need to be able to respond to new and emerging trends in order to stop the spread of disease. This requires highly skilled staff, technology, and the support to do that. The safety net has eroded over the last decade and puts all Oregonians at risk. Although our population has increased by 9.5%, almost 2% since 2010, we have not received an increase in our state fundings for communicable disease control since 2007. Washington County invests almost $1 million in county general fund to support these programs. As our county grows, our population ages, and new and emerging infectious diseases threaten our residents. The stagnant funding doesn't allow us to keep up with the capacity to prepare, to protect, and to respond. In conclusion, maintaining funding and investing in communicable disease and foundational programs and capabilities will ensure that we're able to protect all Oregonians. Thank you for your time and attention and the chance to testify this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Marnie. Mm-hmm. And I'll ask you the same thing I asked Katrina. I'd like some writing and some discussion about the relationship between public health and the CCOs. There should be a way here to leverage substantial amounts of money and allow you to get your programs, but it sounds like it's kind of spotty around the state. That discussion has to go on. It is one of our key questions. And thank you for your testimony. I think you are kind of cool.
Thank you.
Please.
All right. Chair Bates, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Stacey Michelson with the Association of Oregon Counties. But thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I think many of my colleagues from our individual counties have done a far better job than I could have given you the details and specifics of the great work that's done at the local level around public health. But I do want to provide just a quick overview. I'm sure many of you are aware, our counties are statutorily the local public health authorities in Oregon. And as you've heard today, that's a role that our folks take very seriously and put a lot of work into. Generally supporting increased investments in public health, as Marty and Commissioner Carlson mentioned earlier, it's been since 2007 since we've seen a real investment in public health in our state. As you all know, costs continue to go up on an annual basis, right? Even current service level still is more than current service level was in the previous biennia. So without seeing a real increase, we've seen an increased burden shifting to our county general fund. These numbers are a bit old. I apologize for that. I believe we'll be working on an updated version of this report this year. But AOC, this was from 2012, looked at a number of service areas around the state, shared services, and broke down the budget by federal funds, state funds, county general fund, other funds. And so in public health specifically for the 2011-13 biennia, county general fund made up 30% of the public health budget, which was actually just higher than the state portion of that budget, which was 29%. That is actually up from the previous biennia, where county general fund was making up 26% of the budget and the state was 32%. So you can assume, you know, a couple of biennia later, we're seeing that increased shift of counties picking up a larger portion of public health funding. Real numbers, we had reports from 32, so not quite all of our counties, but 32 counties. It was a total of $104 million that our counties were contributing to public health budgets across the state. It's a very large portion for our folks. You know, it makes a really big difference bumping up that state investment. Get us out of the 46th slot. I know you've heard that from a number of folks, but we might be approaching that threshold of however many times you have to hear a fact for it to actually stick in the brain. Would love to see us, you know, move beyond 46. I don't think that's where anyone on this panel wants to see Oregon sitting in terms of public health investment. So that money does go toward tobacco prevention, you know, preventing disease further on. I will highlight, since Lane County wasn't here in person, I do believe you have written testimony. You know, I think there's a really great, not great situation, but timely example of the work that's being done, particularly around the meningitis outbreak down in Lane County, and where public health has really stepped in to help vaccinate 20,000 U of O students. So we see that reined in and not continuing to spread and take additional lives. So I echo all of my colleagues in asking for increased investments in the public health budget. The TMSA piece, you know, $4 million, small amount of money in the governor's recommended budget, but makes a big difference in public health, so I would really ask you to look at that allocation and ensure that those dollars stay within public health. With that, I'll let Sarah have the last word. Thank you.
Co-chairs Bates and Nathanson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify related to the public health budget. My name is Sarah Basler. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Nurses Association. ONA is proud to represent more than 13,000 Oregon nurses, nurse practitioners, and nursing students. Our members work in a wide variety of settings, from large hospitals to small clinics and local public health departments. Nurses in local health departments play a really important role in improving the health of all Oregonians, whether that's through providing preventive care, home visits for new moms and babies, or environmental health assessments. Public health nurses and public health departments are providing needed services for Oregonians who are often among the most vulnerable citizens in the state and may have nowhere else to turn. As you've heard many times, Oregon continues to rank near the bottom in the country in terms of state investment in public health, and Oregon has a huge reliance on federal and other funds to adequately fund some of these services. And you've heard stories this morning about how counties are struggling to do more and more with less and less. The stakes, as you know, are really high right now. One of the issues facing the legislature is the modernization of public health, which is seeking to re-envision some of the infrastructure around public health. This is obviously something that will require an initial investment in order for it to be successful. One of the core, at the core of the function of public health is prevention. And in addition to keeping people healthy, prevention also saves costs in the long term. One area that I wanted to highlight in the vein of prevention, and I know you've heard a lot about this morning, is the work around tobacco prevention. And in 2013, ONA was really pleased to see the legislature make a historic investment in tobacco prevention by allocating some of the TMSA funding specifically for the tobacco prevention program. ONA believes this is a really critical allocation and one that the legislature ought to continue. This session, we're pleased to work with a coalition that's asking for a continued use of some of the TMSA funding for the TPEP program, for PE grants, and also for the Healthy Communities program, which is obesity prevention, in addition to providing funding through the Medicaid program, where of course it is matched. We see that as a balance between budget priorities and recognizing an investment in prevention programs today that could eventually reduce the burden on the Medicaid program. So I thank you for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony, all three of you, and I appreciate you coming here today and giving us your testimony. Thank you. Committee, we finished on time. Did a little juggling up here with the paperwork, but we got it done. So have a nice weekend, and we'll be meeting here again Monday morning, 8 o'clock, and it's going to be?
8:30,
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, on Monday we'll hear from the health policy programs of OHA as well as hear about their KPM measures.
Thank you, and we are adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.